your flow. Make me down a pallet on your flow. Make me down a pallet soft and low. Man, I'm tired, I got no place to go. Weary blues everywhere I see. Weary blues everywhere I see. Weary blues, oh, everywhere I see. Nobody ever had the blues like me. Been hanging around with some good time friends of mine. Hanging around with some good time friends of mine. Oh, they treat me very nice and kind. When I got a dollar and a dime, won't you make me down a pallet on your floor? Make me down a pallet on your floor. Make me down a pallet soft and low. Man, I'm tired, I got no place to go. Down a pallet on your floor. Make me down a pallet soft and low. Man, I'm tired, I got no place to go. Man, I'm tired, I got no place to go. Man, I'm tired, I got no place to go.
It's the Raven of the Blues. One of the penalties of being a musician sometimes can be, if you're in various blues clubs and noisy venues, sometimes the chatter from the audience is louder than your music. We have in front of us somebody who actually can silence a group of noisy drunken men, and I've seen it happen, and it's great to have her. Lucy Zirins, welcome to the Raven and the Blues.
Hello, thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here. I'm on a boat.
You're on a boat.
I'm on a boat.
Not runner-up, but co-winner of the Young Blues Artist of the Year, yeah, along with Blues Boy Dan Owen, and there was hopes of you both being here at once.
Yeah.
And you've opened up with not something off your album, but something which goes back to the 1930s, I guess, and Pallet on the Floor.
Yeah.
So tell me, why the blues? as opposed to any other musical genre you could have had.
I mean, I've always liked lots of different types of music, but when I was kind of, 12, picking up a guitar, I was learning a lot of folky music, and a lot of the blues crosses over, yeah, into that, you know, kind of three-chord stuff. It was quite easy to learn. And then when I was 15, I got given a slide by my music teacher's husband, Paul Corry, who was playing a lot with Michael Rutch, who's obviously a big country blues player. And it just kicked off from there, really. He played me John Hammond, who I'd never heard, you know, and I was like, a white guy can't sound like that. That's incredible, you
yes
know. And we were listening to John Lee Hooker in the kitchen, and we just used to jam, and I just got more and more into it, you know, delved into Son House, Charlie Patton, Robert Johnson, you know, kind of the standards. And then got into a lot more of, you know, the female side of it as well, and then found people like Eva Cassidy that were reworking blues, folk, gospel, you know, a lot later on, you know, and it just, I don't know, it struck a chord with me. It's soul music, isn't it? You know,
it is.
And it's the root of everything. So, I mean, I like a lot of different music, you know, like I keep referencing folk, I like a lot of blues, country as well, and it's just, yeah, it's just the base of all
that. Where did you learn your stagecraft from? Because one of the things you are able to do is literally have everybody eating out of your hand, and it's something which normally comes with many, many hours of stage work, and the age you are, you obviously have got quite a few, but not that many, and I mean, you show other bands how to do it in a sense, so is that just innate self-confidence?
I'm totally not self-confident. It's really funny. I'm absolutely racked with nerves before I do a gig, and I did a lot to start with where people just talked over me, and it was horrible. You know, my first gig, I always reference my first gig, and it was at a working men's club, which working men's clubs, yes, in the north are known for being, yeah, quite rough anyway and quite hard work. And it was a bunch of 70-year-olds, and they just heckled me because all they wanted was bingo instead of music. And I remember I got to my last song, and I forgot like what I was doing halfway through. I was only 15, just turned 16. And I totally maffed it up, and they were so horrible, and I cried, and I swore that I'd never ever cry on stage again because of somebody, and yes, I'd never ever let anybody heckle me. So it kind of just got born out of that, really. And then seeing a lot of people like Michael Roach, for example, who gets his audience involved. It's one man and a guitar, you know, but I've seen him have a whole room in his hand and get them singing back to him and stuff, and it just sparked it off for me. You know, I just wanted to replicate that. And I found that if you get people involved, you know, whether it's singing or whether it's howling and barking, which I do on my quite famous cover of Red Rooster, yeah, whether it's that or whether it's, like I said, just simply chatting to the audience between songs, saying this is what this song is about, you know, I just think that's really important. You've got to engage your audience. They're not going to listen to you for no good reason, no. So you've got to give them that. So
I think the nice thing is, because I saw you at Hebden, yeah, I think the nice thing is that a lot of the audience are there because they know they're going to get involved.
Yeah.
They're there to howl and bark and things, and therefore they set the standards for anybody else coming in. So if anybody comes in and starts to whisper and chatter, there's heads turn everywhere. You know, you have your own police force in the audience.
I do. The audience police.
Yes.
No, I just think it's wonderful that now that people come to my gigs knowing that that's what they're going to get. But even, you know, on the softer stuff, they come and they listen. It's great. I'm just appreciative of being able to do it. And if people enjoy the show, then that's the most important part, isn't it?
You are going to find, though, when you sort of graduate from the smaller venues to the Albert Hall, you know, that this interaction with your audience may not work quite exactly the same. But
It will. You know, I've been wondering about, like, if I got a band together, you know, if I went out with the guys that played on the record, would it work the same? And I think it would. There's a base there that I think resonates with people, whether you're in a 50,000 capacity audience or you're playing to 10 people. You know?
Do you think it's because you're a pretty young slip of a lass, kind of, you know? you're 21, is it, or 22?
21.
21.
Yeah.
You know, sort of, and a girl from the north away, and I think people are therefore perhaps a bit more defensive towards you in a way, aren't they?
I mean, maybe, but then I never. It's not a play on innocence or anything
that.
You know, it's never. But I'm never playing on it, you know what I mean?
No.
But I suppose I am in a way, but I think Northern Charm's a good thing,
yes,
I suppose, when I'm on stage. But then if you look at people like, I don't know, for example, big pop star like Adele, if you watch that concert of her,
yes,
the one that she released, the live one, she's in a capacity crowd, you know, like, I don't know, 50,000 people, and she's talking to them.
Yeah.
Like they're sitting on a sofa, and that's what I love about her. Like, and she's a Cockney lass, you know.
Yes.
I just think audiences are audiences, and you never get the same one twice. But there's always that if you get them and you get them there and you interact with them, it's amazing. I don't think it matters how many people are there, and yeah, I just think hopefully people warm up to me. That's what,
yes,
I want people to do. Yeah.
What are you gonna do for us next?
Oh, what am I gonna do next? What am I going to do next? I know, we'll do Ready to Fall next. Before you start the fire and open all my wasted heart, guess I should warn you that I've been here before. Love's no battlefield, but I've had my share of injuries. I don't know how to make it other than going it alone. The
There's still a lot for me to learn, and I've messed up before. But if you put your trust in me, who knows where we could go? I know I hurt you, and I left you alone and waiting. I'm ready now, ready to fall. And the edge is closer, but I can see clearly now that I'm ready now, ready to fall. I'm ready now, ready to fall. Getting closer, I hear the beating of your heart. The drumming scares me and I don't wanna know how much I feel for you. No, I don't wanna hurt you. There's always casualties for mistakes you make unknown. There's still a lot for me to learn, and I've messed up before. But suddenly you take my hand, it doesn't matter anymore. I know I hurt you, and I left you alone and waiting. I'm ready now, ready to fall. And the edge is closer, but I can see clearly now that I'm ready now, ready to fall. I'm ready now, ready to fall. I'm ready now to face this climb. Guess I had to get there in my own sweet time. But fear won't hold me back from you anymore. I'll take down every wall I've built, stone by stone. I know I hurt you, and I left you alone and waiting. I'm ready now, ready to fall. And the edge is closer, but I can see clearly now that I'm ready now, ready to fall. I know I hurt you, and I left you alone and waiting. I'm ready now, ready to fall. And the edge is closer, but I can see clearly now that I'm ready now, ready to fall. I'm ready now, ready to fall.
So lovely. Ready to fall. That is about 2 years old, roughly, since you...
When did I make the album?
Yes.
I brought the album out in March, and that song was written in the time period between kind of February 2012.
Okay.
Yeah, and we cut the record in October, so yes. I stopped writing for it in August. So it's one of those from kind of between that period.
So you were probably, also, 19 years old when you wrote it?
Yeah, probably, 19 or 20, yeah. So
a lot of maturity in those lyrics.
Is there?
Well, a lot of pain in those lyrics. Well, or a lot of, no, wrong word, a lot of experience in those lyrics.
Yeah, yeah. I get that a lot, you know. Reviews keep saying, how can you write stuff like that? I'm like, well, I've had 5 boyfriends, it's fine. No, but seriously, I mean... It's a song about getting over heartbreak and being ready to go into a relationship that you might have been unsure about before. So, I mean, it's written from personal experience, but it's got a kind of universal theme that I think a lot of people can relate to, and I always try to write that into my music somehow, so hopefully people dig it.
Is writing come easy, or is it something you have to really work at?
It's my favourite thing. Yeah. If I couldn't perform for the rest of my life, but I could write, I think I'd be... probably quite happy, although I would miss playing them to people. But for me, it's the best part, and it always was. I mean, at 12 years old, when I lost my uncle and I got his guitar, there's obviously like a lot of emotion stored up that went along with that, and writing was kind of a big release for me. I mean, I wrote my first song at 13, Where Did You Go, that was about him. So it's always been a really personal thing for me, and it comes quite naturally, but I work at it as well. I mean, you do have days where you sit down and you're just like, I can't get anything out today, but working through that is part of learning your craft, I think, and trying to make yourself write something for at least 20 minutes is really important. So,
is there anything that you write which you think, well, that's okay, but I could never actually do that on stage, that's not me?
Yeah, I mean, but there are songs that I've written that I don't think will be necessarily suitable for myself, or I've written them with another vocal range in mind. and I'd like to give those songs away, you know. I'm not one that's precious about them, you know. I want people to cover them, and I want people to use my songs, because that's kind of the highest honour, I think, yes. if somebody else wants to listen to it. But I mean, I'm quite open, really, I suppose. I never write anything where I think it's too personal, you know. I'm kind of an open book. And I keep saying this, I should walk around with a sign that says, don't be friends with me if you don't want to end up in a song.
I was casting my mind back earlier on today when I was just thinking, actually, Lucy's 21. I'm just trying to think what I was like when I was 21. It was difficult. It's a long, many years ago. But at that time, I was still pretty malleable, I guess. I was still open to all sorts of influences, and I was changing. And the person I was when I was 23 was very different to the one when I was 21. Mm-hmm. Do you feel yourself changing as well?
Definitely. I mean, when I was 15, 16, I started gigging. I was doing probably a lot more traditional blues than I do now. My sound's expanded because my tastes have changed, and my experiences, obviously, my life experiences have changed. So I'm very different to the girl I was at 16 years old. But I think that it's good. It can only be good for a writer and a performer. The more you grow and the older you get, the more you learn. So I'm just taking everything on board and kind of running with it and letting myself write what I want to write. I never think in terms of a box of genre or, you know, I must write about this. I just kind of let it come out of me, and I'm just enjoying everything I'm doing at the minute, you know. I'm lucky enough to be doing this full time, and I'm trying to make a living out of it, and it's the best thing ever, you know. There's not many 21-year-olds that can say, you know, that they're doing something like this, you know. So I feel really blessed that I've managed to do it.
It also would seem, judging by the amount of column inches you're getting and amount of press you're getting, that your star is in the ascendant, and it's not like it's going to be a slow slog up the mountain. It does seem to have gone up very, very quickly this last 12 months, isn't it?
I mean, since the album came out, I mean, brought it out in March, end of March, and it's just been incredible. You know, the gigs keep getting better, and the response, the reaction to the album, you know, I was really worried when we got the CDs pressed. I was like, oh my God, are we going to actually sell any? And then on the first day, the orders came in, and I was like, oh my god, I'm doing this, you know. Yes. People want to buy my album, and it was just the best feeling ever. I think I posted on Facebook, I said it was like Christmas coming, and it really was. So I mean, yeah, it sometimes feels like a slow slog. I mean, I have been doing this since, like I said, I was 15, 16, went out gigging, but this last year has just been incredible. I'm rolling with it. I'm the happiest I've ever been to be doing this, and it can only get better, fingers crossed.
You will see on the video the flashing eyes of Lucy Zirins. What are you going to do for us next, musically?
I'm going to do a song called Goodnight, which is a song about musicians that die too young. Self-hunger by an all-consuming greed for a love that won't linger and a glance that won't last. And now you're smoking up, drinking up, tired of your love gone too fast. But if you burn out too quickly, well, you're sure gonna fall. But how can you see that when the world around you is so small? You're a thief in the night, boy, who stole too much from a life. And how can I make this right? How can I save that young heart, that brilliant young mind? Please now, oh please, don't you go now before your time. You're burning all of your bridges, and you've flown too close to the sun. Now it's too late, your wings are on fire and the damage is done. You've burnt out too quickly,
and the poetry's dead, lost between the void of your heart and your soul and your head. You just kept on trying, you were always blazing through life, till heaven took you. Adieu, my friend, good night. They say that some people, they just burn too bright. Adieu, my friend, adieu, good night.
6 years, isn't it, till you're 27?
I know, I hope I don't pop my clogs.
I think you're living a kind of different lifestyle to those that did pop their clogs at 27 somehow.
Yeah, I'm quite clean living, really. I'm sat here with a cup of tea. Very nice cup of tea, by the way, Dave. Thank you. I'm not a big drinker or I'm not an alcoholic yet.
It's so the way it is. Most of the listeners to this program are in the States, and I guess it may be the same over there too, but here in UK, it's remarkable. People come to do sessions here and I say, you know, when it's over, especially, do you want a beer? Do you want a glass of wine? Oh, no, thanks, no. It's always water, tea, coffee, that's
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Most of the young guys and, you know, people coming through now are all pretty clean living. It's a very different scene altogether, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you can't do Keith Richards now, can you, really? I think he was lucky to survive. No, I mean, it just doesn't work for me. I've never been much of a party animal. I just think you've got to take care of yourself, you know, and I've seen too many people around me that have got involved in drink and drugs, and I mean, it's just not a great way to live, really. So, I mean, it works for some people, they can function on it, but I don't think you're going to live a long life if you're drinking a litre of Jack Daniels every day.
Was there any ever doubt you were going to be a musician?
I mean, I was always really creative. I wanted to be an animator. That was one of the things I said when I was quite young, because I liked drawing. Not very good at it now, though. And the other thing I was really interested in was swimming. I used to compete an awful lot. And then I got a knee injury, and around that time I picked up the guitar, and it just took over. It was just I think the minute I started writing, I was hooked. So, I mean, some people might call me crazy for going, I'm just going to go and do it full time. But, I mean, I worked in Sainsbury's for 2 years after I was at school, you know, saved up, made the record, and I just want to keep doing it, you know. I love what I do. And
what was your parents' reaction? What did your dad say when you said, "Dad, I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to go professional"?
He was like, "Have you got the money to do it?" But no, Papa's earrings is amazing. He ferries me about to gigs. He has done from the start, you know, because at 15 you can't drive yourself to a gig down the road. So he's always been there, and he was really supportive. I think my mum was a little bit more reserved to start, which she said, you know, "Have you thought about it sensibly? Are you sure you want to leave your job, you know, da da da?" And she just eventually, she came around to it. She said, "The opportunities that are coming to you are too big to miss, you know. Yeah. If this is what you want to do, then do it." And she's incredible, you know. Come home from a gig and there's food left out on the top for me that she's made. And she, yeah, it's just, I'm really, really lucky to have supportive parents. I think they could have possibly thought I was going mad, but they've chosen to go along with it anyway.
And are they leaving you totally to your own decisions, or are they sort of getting involved in direction?
Yeah. I mean, you could be forgiven him for thinking that Papa Zerians has the reins quite a lot, because obviously he's there all the time, you know, when he drives me at gigs and he comes around with me. But he's very much kind of the kind of dad where he just leaves me to my own devices. He refuses to interfere with anything creative. He just, like, you just do your thing, right, on that. If I need advice on business stuff, you know, if I'm not sure, I can go to him, I can go to my mum, and they're really supportive and helpful. But generally he trusts me to make the decisions that I need to make.
There are some people in the business whose parents actually are using their offspring as a vicarious way of getting into the business, you know, if you know what I mean. I could never do it, but my son or my daughter or whatever is, and it's a joy to sort of see that you are being completely independent, but with the support from the parents as well.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just really lucky. Like I said, I'm not very good at maths particularly, so when I said to Dad, like, I'm going to be self-employed essentially, you know, I need help with the kind of accounts thing, he was amazing, you know. He set it all up for me and taught me how to do it. So I'm quite proud in a way that this year I've took on more of the business than I ever did, and I do most of my bookings, and it's just really good. But it's nice to have him there as a safety net, and he does help out immensely, and so does Mum, you know. And even my sister, she came to a gig at Cleethorpes, I don't see her very much, and she was at Cleethorpes, and I roped her and her fiance into selling my t-shirts for me. I got them on the merchandise table, so it's a family business now.
Do you feel in control, or do you just are you just rolling with it?
Oh, you know what? Sometimes I wake up and I'm like, what the hell am I doing with my life? My God, I don't know what I'm going to do tomorrow, like, let alone in 6 months. And I think, you know, it's quite scary because there is no safety net financially with any of this, you know. Just recently I had a gig cancelled and I thought, well, that's my money for the week gone, you know. But at the same time, I just love it so much. Like, I just try to focus on the positive all the time and keep on the path that I want to be on. And yeah, it can be really scary not knowing what's coming tomorrow, but it's exciting as well.
Yeah. But with the experience you've had working with other people now, other musicians much older than you, you will know there's going to be some bumps in the road and some shit along the way, but at least you're kind of aware it's going to happen and you're half prepared for it, I guess.
I mean, I could spend my life... I am quite an anxious person anyway, but I could spend my life worrying or just enjoy it and just go with the excitement, you know. I was worried I didn't know where Waterloo Station was today to come here. I was fretting about it for 2 days, booking my tickets, you know, trying to sort stuff out.
And you said that all of a sudden you discovered the escalators made you dizzy as well.
I did, yeah. I got on the escalator to come up to Waterloo.
They can be quite steep.
It was really wobbly and I thought, oh my God, I'm really dizzy. But no, I mean, yeah, it's all good fun and I got here safe. So there you go. It just shows you just got to do it, haven't you, and throw yourself into situations.
Chasing Clocks is March of this year, so it's 6 months old. Have you got a date for another album?
Oh God, no.
No.
I mean, I'm writing quite a bit at the minute, which is really good. While I was in the studio, I had a song that I was working on, which I've played at gigs since, which has been received really well. I'm just keeping writing. I'm just going to let this album do what it needs to do and grow. You know, I'm going to give it kind of another year yet. But I've been toying with the idea of doing kind of a Christmas EP next year. And doing, you know, a lot
next
of people...
Next year?
Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of people are doing Kickstarter campaigns.
That's right.
Which is kind of appealing to me. So I was thinking of putting something out kind of Christmas time, maybe 4 or 5 tracks, new songs, but with a kind of Christmassy theme. So I'll just see what happens.
I mean, there is an insatiable demand with the audience, as you know, because they're going to be coming along in a few months' time and look at the merch stall and say, got anything new? And that's going to be quite sort of a pressure on you. You know, apart from a new T-shirt or whatever, but there is going to be a need for some perhaps a new audio along the way. And
I mean, I try to upload a lot of live stuff, and I put my new song up on YouTube to gauge people's reaction to it before I played it live, which was...
Now, I got a copy of... it was kind of an official bootleg from a club, and I forget which one it was now, but did you make that available to everybody, or was it just to the DJs?
I did, yeah. Basically, I was at a place called Cobbles and Clay a few months ago, which is a lovely little coffee shop, and it was part of Haworth Arts Festival. So this lovely guy, Patch, came along and he said, would you mind if I recorded your gig? And I just said, yeah, do whatever. You know, he had a little Tascam hand recorder and he put it on, and he recorded it and it came out really nice. So I just said to him, is it okay if I put this up online, just threw together a little bit of artwork and put it as a digital download for people so that they could go and get it free. So I mean, that's at Bandcamp. If you search my name, Lucia Zirin's Bandcamp, it'll come up straight away. It's also on SoundCloud and you can download all the tracks. So I just wanted to put more stuff out there and, you know, keep the ball rolling, and, you know, fingers crossed, I'll just keep pouring out new material and I can just see how people react to it. You know, it's a constant organic process.
I mean, you mentioned Bandcamp there. You're pretty active on all the social media places. So we'll find you on Facebook, find you on Twitter. Lucy Zirin's on both, isn't it?
Lucy Zirin's Music for Facebook. I've got a page on there, and it's Lucy Zirin's on Twitter. Yeah, I'm on SoundCloud, I'm on Bandcamp, and I've got a website, which is just www.lucyzirins.com, and all my social media links are all on there. So if you just go to there and you're not sure where to go, there's icons.
It's been a joy to see you.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And we'll get you together again with Blues Boy Dan. Because that's going to be a pairing. Tony Winfield this morning, when I said you were coming, a lot of people said, Is Dan coming as well? I said, no, sadly not. Because we made a pact kind of thing, you and I and Dan, when you picked up the awards at Cone, we said you must come down and do a session together.
He's a busy boy, though, isn't he?
Well, you're a busy girl, too. And you're both quite a distance away from me as well. So yeah. If I was a bit further north, it would be easier for you to get to. But
Well, we'll do it, though. We're going to do it.
One day we will.
Yeah. It's just nice to come on my own, though, as well. I'm really enjoying it.
If need be, I'll come up to you guys with the recording gear and we'll do it somewhere up there, you know.
Ooh. Oh, yeah. I want to come back to the boat, though. I love it here. It's really nice.
Well, the sun's come out, so what we'll probably do after the session is take you back to the station by boat.
Oh, lovely. I'm so excited.
And show you David Gilmour's studio and stuff like that. But anyway, that's after you've done your last number. What are you going to do for us next?
I'm going to do the second track on the album, which is a song called Tearing Me Down, which I wrote about a heartbreak. They're all about heartbreak.
But you said you had five, didn't you?
No, that was a... I was joking. Okay.
How can we fight when there ain't nothing to fight for? How can you say I do nothing? How could I do more? You're here with me, but I feel like I'm on my own. Bitter words there unspoken, but the blame's left with me, I know. Been tearing me down, oh, oh. You've been tearing me down, oh, oh. Said, and what's more to say? And how could I say more when we don't even talk about anything anymore? We're getting by. But that barely makes a life. I'm empty inside. There's no more tears left to cry. You've been tearing me down. Oh, oh. You've been tearing me down. Oh, oh. And I'm tired of your lies. Your hatred in disguise of a love that we once knew. And I was lost in the haze and I couldn't walk away. But I'm leaving you this time. It's true, you've been tearing me down. You've been tearing me down. Else would do, yeah. Then came the thunder and the rain and the crashing of the waves, and we were drowning in all of our fears. And the world that we've got, well, it don't mean a lot when you've lost all your hope and belief. Stop tearing me down, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You've been tearing me down, oh. You've been tearing me down, oh, oh. You've been tearing me down, oh, oh. So I